it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
OneFootDown.com and the OFT Podcast proudly bring to you The Beat on Notre Dame's Beat with Philip Goff. Let's go!
So next up, we have Tim O'Malley covering Notre Dame sports for Irish Illustrated as a part of 247 Sports. How's it going, Tim?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. I really appreciate the time and really look forward to taking a little bit of a peek behind the curtain on you as a Notre Dame writer. But before we dive in here, where can people find you both on Twitter and online?
Twitter is Tim O'Malley, ND. Did not know that when I grabbed that in 2008, 2009, it was going to be very important to have the ND on there for my job. And then obviously IrishIllustrated.com on 24/7 Sports Network.
Awesome. So you're telling me there's probably no other O'Malley Notre Dame fans out there?
Apparently not. This worked out well, though. That was a good differentiator to have accidentally.
Yeah. So to kind of really start from the beginning here, a question that I'm always more curious about, especially as national beat writers, is, was there a point in your life or what age were you where, sports really started to take over your brain?
Yeah. My oldest brothers, I'm the youngest of seven, and three of my older brothers love sports, bled football. And my dad loves sports and my mom and sister really like sports. So it was always in my house. My dad was a professor at Notre Dame and the medical school at IU on campus. So I was going to Notre Dame basketball games at a very early age and football games once I was old enough to fight for the tickets. I will say they lived in Omaha before moving to South Bend. And so my two oldest brothers are Nebraska fans, diehard Nebraska fans. So those tickets opened up to me faster because my dad was not going to take Nebraska fans that are teenagers instead of his son to a Notre Dame football game. So yeah, at a very young age, I loved Notre Dame football, basketball, and just kind of loved most sports growing up. Really, it was all over my house.
And were you playing all the sports as well?
Yeah, basketball, football, and baseball were the ones I stuck to. I did not play much soccer growing up. My kids do like soccer. They really are more into baseball, softball than anything else. But yeah, I never did play youth soccer. I don't know why. Seems like something I would have done, but I was just always home playing basketball, I guess. That was the hoop in my driveway was enough for an entire summer and everything else.
Yeah. I have to imagine you're one of the few Midwestern kids who grew up not playing, the youth league soccer.
Yeah. No, I've never touched it. So I enjoy watching it. Okay. I'm not, no Pete Sampson watching soccer, but I do enjoy it nowadays as an adult.
That's awesome. So obviously that answers the question if you were a Notre Dame fan growing up, but I'm curious if you have like the earliest memory, both positive or negative, around Notre Dame.
I remember the Elite Eight. I don't remember the Final Four the Notre Dame played in, in 78, but I remember the Elite Eight in 79, and I was a little six-year-old crying and complaining that Magic Johnson was cheating. Because when he was stealing the ball, he was using his fist, and you're not allowed to do that. I have no idea if he's actually using his fist, but that's what I use as the reason for a loss. So that's my first memory of basketball and football. I think I knew of Herschel Walker when I knew about three people in the world. So Herschel Walker, losing to Georgia is my first memory, but I can't really place that being the thing. My first ticket, to my late father's credit, that I have is a 1981 USC game. I don't remember that game, so I feel bad if he made that my first game. 82 is when I remember going to football games. So I grew up on Jerry Faust. That's somehow I saved.
And that's interesting. And when you obviously your sports were a massive, massive part of your life as a, as a kid or high school, or even approaching your time at Notre Dame, were any particular, publications or sources or any writers that you remember growing up, like reading or following?
Yeah, actually, I talked about this the last few years with Alan Wasilewski at Notre Dame, who's transitioning back to football from basketball. We went to high school together and loved The National when it came out. It was kind of like Frank DeFord's offshoot after leaving Sports Illustrated, the daily newspaper covering sports with just fantastic writing. And obviously USA Today was the, was kind of the go-to grab for all kids my age, 50 cents to get that sports section. But the National was huge. And then I had Sports Illustrated subscription. I think it's 84 because I can still picture, I believe I have it actually, that Goose Gossage is on the cover. So 1984 was my Sports Illustrated subscription. And as a 49er fan, my dad got me 49ers Report. And it would come after, the preview would come after the games were played in the mailing from California. But I still loved it anyway.
No, I have fond memories as a kid of just waiting each week for those, you know, Sports Illustrated articles and yeah, magazines to come out. And, you know, I remember even flipping to the back, you know, each time and just waiting for the Rick Riley articles. And for
right,
me, that,
right,
that was the first form of, I think as like a, you know, 8-9 year old of more journalism that wasn't pictures. So I was like, wow, here's a story that's being told.
I've gotten rid of a lot of my old Sports Illustrated, but not the oldest ones. So it's funny to kind of track when Rick Riley took over. That used to be called the 19th hole. It was just kind of a random story back there. Then there were some guest writers coming in. I think Rick Talander on occasion had a column. He was writing for them, but occasionally had a column back there. But Rick Riley's really the first one that, you know, that became his page. And I think that was cool to see somebody like own that page. So even when I started working for newspapers and magazines out of college, it was great to have a column like you own that page. And he was the first one I can recall really doing that. I'm sure he's not the first, but the first I recall.
Yeah. And even, you know, I haven't had as much exposure or experience, but that was really for me, the first really person who I looked forward to reading something new and different each week. And so for me, that was such kind of a unique perspective. And, you know, I'm curious of these influences, you know, obviously you ended up going to Notre Dame. Did you have really a choice or any of your options, or was that kind of signed, sealed, and delivered from
there? I really wanted to go to Notre Dame. My sister did go to Notre Dame. My other brothers went to IU, IUSB, no, in Ohio State, actually. My late brother, John, went to journalism school at Ohio State. He worked with Tim Priester quite a bit when Tim was with Blue and Gold back in the 80s. John was at the Hammond Times, and he worked with Eric Hansen at Times, too, at the South Bend Tribune, actually. So Notre Dame was pretty much all or nothing for me. The Midwest kid in me was always intrigued by UCLA also, but I considered that actually post-graduation, but I did not. Instead, I went into my career relatively soon after my career was working for the St. Joe newspaper, Herald Palladium. So it wasn't really a career yet. I was covering sports for a local newspaper nearby, but I got to live on the lake. So that was fun.
Yeah. Not
the type of house you picture on the lake, of course, renting, but it was still on the lake.
Yeah, not quite the Pacific Ocean, but well, you know, South Bend has its charm. When you were heading into Notre Dame, were you anticipating covering sports or covering journalism, or what was the approach there?
Yeah, as an English major, I wanted to be a sports writer. I did not go right into it after, and despite that job at the Herald Palladium, I then moved to Atlanta to be an editor and writer. The position was called editor, was really writing mostly for Sporting Goods Trade Magazine. We had 10 magazines. And so I kind of got into the publishing business with that, learning the ropes. I remember I thought of this today. I don't know why. It had nothing to do with this interview. I thought of this today. In 1999, we were starting to put our monthly magazine stories on the internet. And I remember thinking they'd be like, all right, got to make sure you put that on our webpage. And I thought to myself, no one's going to see it on the webpage anyway. Why am I doing this right now? How ridiculous that sounds 23 years later, that you think your magazine you're mailing out to subscribers is going to be more widely read than what you can put on the internet. But that's how I felt that long ago.
Yeah, that is absolutely a wild thought. Do any of those super early publications still live online today?
They might. It was Sporting Goods Dealer. We did win a few awards for a... What we did was we tied in the four major sports with, instead of writing a sporting goods story around them, we wrote a historical perspective of that sport with the sporting goods that evolved. And I remember we were very proud of winning that award in 2000 down in Georgia. I actually do still have a couple of those. The pullout was what won the award, and it was fun writing because, you know, writing about products really wasn't all that fun. That was more of a job where you work with other people that love sports and you talk about football all day while you write about sporting goods. And of course there's a lot of fun. Hey, you go to a trade show as a writer, people like to buy you stuff. So that was a fun little perk of my job as well.
Yeah. Not a bad gig there. So coming back from Atlanta, how did you end up back in South Bend and covering Notre Dame then?
Yeah. My family still lived, or my parents still lived here. My fiance, my wife now, fiance then, is from, Valparaiso. So her parents were in Valparaiso nearby. She was finishing residency at Emory and had a few options. I wanted to stay in Atlanta. She wanted to leave Atlanta. So she said, name a couple places. And again, going back, I was like, well, I always kind of wanted to be out, and maybe I'd start going to grad school as an older person at UCLA. I did say that again, actually, but she was, she was wise. We did not move to Los Angeles. but South Bend was one of the places, and I knew I could then start looking for jobs here. And I started, this is interesting. I guess I did not have an in yet with Blue and Gold. Shortly after moving here, I started stringing for Blue and Gold and met Lou Somogyi. That was Todd Burlidge, John Hainsworth, and Lou Somogyi, actually. And, now I think about it, I lived here a whole year without covering Notre Dame football at all in any form. I did a little basketball for Blue and Gold to start. And I was actually, for the previous few years, writing for fantasyguru.com, which is still out there, John Hansen. Now he has his own channel on Sirius. I was the guy he hired to write about defensive players. So I would rank and list defensive players every year, every month, and every game for that website. So I was really into the NFL then, and I have not touched a fantasy sport since then because I was oversaturated by having to do it every day.
So you don't do any fantasy?
I don't pay. I find my job with Notre Dame, covering Notre Dame, makes it so I love watching the NFL still. I like the NBA playoffs. I like Major League Baseball playoffs. I cannot focus on other things besides Notre Dame football and basketball. I don't know how Tim Priester. Well, I know how Tim Priester focuses on baseball so much. He played baseball for Notre Dame, so it's still a labor of love for him. But I feel like every day of my life is covering Notre Dame football, and I like to sit back and watch games other than that. So I don't have I've been in fantasy leagues, but I forget to put my lineup in, and I hate being that guy because I know what that guy was like when I was running those things. So I ran a football league from like 1989 to 2008. And it coincides with me working, covering Notre Dame. I stopped. It was just like, so we had 19 years of NFL fantasy football back then. That was pretty fun for me and my friends.
That is, I'd say that's super early on the fantasy game, and probably especially you writing about it had probably a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, it was fun. We did newsletters and stuff, and all of a sudden I was just like, I'm done. I'm out. Everybody's still mad at me for like 13 years. People I dissolved a league that was going for 19 years because I had a new job and didn't feel like doing it anymore. So I guess that is kind of a jerk move, but I didn't think of it that way at the time. But I apologize to all those people if they hear.
Yeah, and I know they're all listening right now. So, yeah, exactly. Sorry. So kind of transitioning over to your time here at Irish Illustrated. So, personally, one of my favorite reads each week is actually your Monday musings. And, you know, what I'm kind of curious about here is what your creative process going into it each week looks like, especially the ability to creatively, you know, embed quotes and things from your kids in there. It's always just fascinated me how you come up with something new and fresh each week with that.
Yeah, I think the first one I ever did was because Pete, Tim, and I were still working together. It was my first year with Irish Illustrated, and we would go to practice and there's three of us. I'm like, why are there three of us? Were two of us going to write about a defensive practice report? So one did offense, one did defense. And I was like, I will follow up tomorrow with just some thoughts on what I saw without being specific. And that was the first musings was a practice column. And then all of a sudden I went with another one on a Monday. And I don't know why I came up with nine. Jack Freeman still says you kind of pigeon. This is like 5 years ago. He's like, you pigeonhole yourself with this nine. Now you have to come up with nine thoughts every week. It's like, that can't be that hard. Find out when you write 51 or 52 of those a year, sometimes the nine pots in June. Yeah, I was very happy about the baseball run. It's nice to have the baseball run. Dante Moore helps. CJ Carr helps some new ideas, of course, in the off season. But yeah, and for the kids, I don't know why I started. I just think Declan, my middle child, just started saying funny things. And some of them were about sports when he was three or four. And then a lot of them are not about sports. And people seem to like it. I know there's probably a small percentage that hate that part. I have gotten people that have sent me messages like, never talk about your kids. No one cares. Whatever. I was like, well, more people seem to like it than don't. So I think a lot more people like it than don't. So that's my highlight. I know a lot of people only read that. I'm not sure if I should be insulted or not, but they only read number five. That is about the fan of the kids. So it's kind of like fast forwarding to the prediction of a game score and not reading the entire preview that you put all the work in. Someone just reads number five and moves on. And then ask me what I think about Tyler Buchner. Like, it's all there. Just read number four. that's my favorite one to write as well. And I take about 1 week off a year in July on vacation. I got that coming up here pretty soon.
No, I think I speak for most people here outside of those, you know, couple angry commenters, that it is, it's nice. And I think what it does is it really humanizes you, and it takes a kind of the, just the, I'm a football writer aspect out of it, because there's clearly, you know, so much more going on in your lives than just Notre Dame football, despite what a lot of your readers would anticipate, that that's the only cognitive thought that you have on a daily basis.
Yeah. And I get to kind of commiserate with Pete Has Kids. When we do our podcast all together, he has kids that are, so I want to get this right, sixth grade and fourth, going into seventh and fifth, because mine are going to sixth and fourth. And so they kind of went through some of the same stuff, and playing youth sports is fun. And of course, Tim Priester's son, Eric, he coached him. If anybody listened to the podcast this week, he talked about that memory of coaching him. And I knew Eric when he was working for the Observer. So I think we'd all kind of laugh at youth sports and the fun of it and the absurdity of it. And, you know, someone coming up to me and you win or lose 11-1 in a softball game, and the little girl asks you if you won or lost. And you're like, I mean, seriously, do you really not know if we won or lost? It was 11-1 for crying out loud. But I think that's the fun part about youth sports, is it's still fun. No matter how serious some parents get, they should not, kids get serious, but it really is just for, kind of something most of us can relate to, either playing it or having kids around it.
Yeah. And it's, you've obviously had, you know, a lot of fun coaching over the past few years with different kids. Is there any, you know, modern college football coach that you try to model your coaching career after?
Modern college football coach.
It doesn't have to be, I guess, it can be any coach of any sport, I guess, since you're multi-sport.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's a tough question. I think they're young enough where I very much do want to win these games. However, I know that is not the most important thing. I'm upfront with all the parents that, look, at these are rec leagues. We are going to play everybody where they want to play. We're all going to give it a shot. Then I always joke, even though I'm not joking, except the tournament where the lineup belongs to me and no one's going to complain because they've all played for 10 games wherever they want. So I guess I would be the fairest coach in the world for the regular season. And then all of a sudden everything flips. And when people ask me things, I'm like, nope, go right field, get out of there. So I, that's where the competitor comes out in me. Who would be a good coaching comparison for that? That's maybe during the regular season, I'm Jerry Faust, and I'll take Lou Holtz during the playoffs. How's that? We give away a lot of games by pitting kids that can't catch at first base in these rec leagues, but it's okay.
Yeah. So come playoff time, it's all business. So
It's all business. Yeah.
And so, you know, to put it lightly, South Bend is obviously a Notre Dame town. And at least in my words, you are, and I think the Irish Illustrated crew and some others are, you know, a bit of local celebrities around town. And, you know, what I'm curious about is, do you ever get, you know, stopped around South Bend or people asking you for scoops or insights?
Yeah, we do get that a lot. You know, what's an interesting, really interesting thing is the most of the time that it happens is traveling to Notre Dame games, which makes sense, but it happens every time I'm in an airport traveling to Notre Dame game on the way there and on the way back. But that's because they're Notre Dame fans traveling. Of course, I've kind of narrowed it down. Obviously outside stadiums, Notre Dame and road games, that happens a lot around here. I think it just happens more because Priester and I do the pregame on WNDU, which is the local TV. Mm-hmm. So when local TV people watch you, they find out what your job is. Like a lot of people at Harris Park where I coach, a lot of people were like, we had no idea that's what you did. And all of a sudden I was like, well, I don't really work for WNDU, but I'm on the pregame show. So a lot of people find out I cover sports from that. So yeah, it does happen. It's always flattering. It's funny. My wife laughs when it happens. She's like, why would anybody recognize you? It's like, I don't know. I guess a lot of people watch TV. That's part of it. But the funny thing happened, we're on our 10-year anniversary. You're going to appreciate this. In St. Lucia, first day there, and someone yelled, Tim O'Malley, and my wife was actually kind of mad, I think, that happened, because I'm like, this has nothing to do with Notre Dame football travel. So that was my shining moment for someone recognizing me, was in St. Lucia on our 10-year anniversary.
Yeah. Tim O'Malley, global recognizable.
I have a feeling he's actually, full disclosure, an Irish Illustrated subscriber, but that, I'd not tell my wife that. She just thinks it was somebody random that saw me on TV. So
yeah. Just, hey, you know what? It's South Bend, you know, the South Bend Airways might reach down there. So yeah. it could be like WGN in the, you know, in the 90s around.
I'm not sure that Georgia Tech basketball preview reached down to St. Lucia, but yeah, maybe.
Awesome. A quick thing here. So if you were to cover like any college football team besides Notre Dame, who would you want it to be?
I would need tradition involved, because I wouldn't say I've ever gotten bored covering Notre Dame, but like, let's transition to Notre Dame basketball, because some games don't matter because it's the regular season. And if they're playing Delaware State. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, until you get into league play. So I would have to be a tradition rich team. Alabama is such an easy answer. I would love to cover, let's remove the national title. I would love to cover Georgia because there's enough angst with that fan base too, that, although I might get annoyed that, with the SEC all the time. I live in the SEC area for 10 years. So I think there's enough angst with that fan base, but they're good and there's tradition that it would be enjoyable. It would not be Ohio State or Michigan. I can say that for a fact. And I wouldn't want to cover somewhere where it's not as important, like Stanford or Northwestern. So I don't want to make it, I'm not trying to make a college crack here or anything like that. So I guess we'll just keep defaulting and go to Arizona State. I'll live in Tempe and cover the that's my answer. But yeah, somewhere nice weather and where it really matters to them.
Yeah, your consistent comments on the podcast about your excitement for the end of the year USC games are making more and more sense as we keep talking.
Yes. Yeah, I've had a lot of winters here, man. But had a lot of winters in South Bend. But no, I do enjoy that trip and I've already booked that flight. So
nice.
First one every year.
Obviously, NIL is quite the hot topic, and I'm not going to dive into the semantics of it or the ethics of it at all. But what I am curious about is if 18-year-old Tim O'Malley was a 5-star quarterback recruit, what NIL deal are you looking to sign?
Yeah, and that's a big deal because I'm glad Notre Dame is stepping up to this. I wish that it didn't start off everywhere in the country with just money being handed out for becoming a recruit. You can't even tell you unintended consequences. It was just so poorly managed after all the time they had to do it. But my NIL deal, it'd be hard to go to Notre Dame because they're not quite as public about it, but it would definitely have something to do with food. Probably, well, 18-year-old Tim O'Malley, I guess it would be, maybe I'd be endorsing Mexican restaurants and Mexican things like tacos and stuff. That was my expertise back then. I guess 21-year-old Tim O'Malley evolved a little bit into more of a cook. 21-year-old Tim O'Malley probably would have gone to Anheuser-Busch for his NIL deal, if that would be allowed as well. That's a great question. And I sadly probably would have had a college choice swayed by it because how could you not? Right. I mean, 18-year-old me in South Bend, if I was a good enough quarterback to go to Notre Dame, it's hard to say no, but what if Notre Dame's behind the times in that? Then there are other options out there. I think athletes deserve what they can get, but obviously this is not exactly how we plan on going about it.
Yeah. It's a weird, probably I'm guessing a few year stretch here where a lot of players are getting paid, significantly. And I'm really curious to get a little serious here, a little curious to see, what happens when, someone who signed a multi-million dollar deal doesn't play at all. And they're just a bust of a player. Like what are going to be the unintended consequences? Is there going to be a blowback for that? It's going to be a really interesting, 1, 3, 5, and 10 year stretch here.
I have often said, I've said names of the podcast before, so I'm not going to say a former player's name, but Brady Quinn should not get the same that a third string defensive tackle gets at Notre Dame. Like the third string defensive tackle, it says we deserve to be paid. Third string quarterback. Let's leave poor defensive tackles out of it for once. The third string quarterback that says we deserve to be paid does not deserve to be paid for his contributions to Notre Dame the way Brady Quinn does, because that jersey sells because of Brady Quinn. It's Chris Webber at Notre Dame or at Michigan is my favorite story. When Chris Webber said, my jersey's hanging there with my name on it and I can't buy it. Of course, we found out later he could have bought it, but in theory, he couldn't buy it. I've always found that crazy for student athletes, but I also don't think that 85 football players deserve to be paid the way Brady Quinn would play or deserve to get their name, image, and likeness guarantees, because then you're leaving out the other sports as well. And you're trying to tell me that there's not 6 soccer players on Notre Dame's women's team that deserve it more than the third string defensive tackle, the third string. It's a very murky area. And when do you get to the point where they're employees and you cut them?
Yeah.
That's what I've always found to be really unseemly is we're paying you, you're not performing, so we're going to take away your money. And also, Notre Dame doesn't publicly take away a scholarship, but at some point they're not going to want to be giving scholarships to someone that don't perform that they've already given money to.
No, definitely. And I think for me, my first real kind of look into wanting NIL to be a thing, but just assuming that somebody else would just figure it out appropriately, I remember I was reading a story, I want to say in like 2015 or 16 on ESPN, that was about Todd Gurley being suspended for, you know, getting paid to sign autographs. And then on the right side of that article, they were advertising for number 3 Georgia for jerseys on like Nike.com. Yeah, and I was like, this is just awful.
That's the Chris Webber thing, but only 10 years later. That is similar to that. I mean, you make a great point when you say somebody should have figured it out. I don't think you're wrong. Someone should have been able to figure this out ahead of what we've done, because there should have been more effort put into it. It was almost like hiding up the Homer Simpson, hide under a bunch of coats and hope the problem goes away. And all of a sudden the problem's out.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting and evolving discussion that, you know, I think this is, you know, we've seen recruiting play out in just a extremely unique way, but don't reflect too much time on that, 'cause I know we're coming towards the end here. So I know a question that I'm really curious about, and I've asked a couple others of this question and provided some pretty interesting answers, is if you could have any unfiltered, off the record discussion with any, you know, player, coach, or topic around Notre Dame football, you know, what would that be?
Yeah, we've kind of considered this a few times on the podcast, and a lot of people go kind of micro and like the old what happened at Michigan thing with Brian Kelly in 2019. I would definitely go more broad than that. I think in recent years, I would like to talk to Manti Te'o about when he found out that he had been catfished, how that went for what we're looking at about a month, right? I don't want to mess up the dates here, but I think it was about a month of his life, and it was a very important month of his life. I'd like to talk to Brian Kelly or Jack Swarbrick about when they realized that they had a cheating scandal on their hands that was going to get bigger than, or it was going to be made bigger than it was. By reporting it, they did the right thing. And then we realized by reporting it, they did the absolutely wrong thing, which is another incredibly stupid thing about the NCAA. I will forever jump on things Notre Dame does poorly. They handled that perfectly, and they should not recognize the NCAA's punishment.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely ridiculous. And I don't want me to go in the weeds here, but that is something I would like to talk to Kelly and Swarbrick about. What, I guess Kelly didn't really make this decision, but what went into the decision? Did you have any idea it was going to go so haywire when you self-reported this? But the Te'o thing was so interesting to me. I cannot imagine what he was going through for 1 month as a good kid. I thought when I talked to him after the Michigan State game and he said, my friend, and then the story started coming out where they said like girlfriend, love of his life and all that. I was like, why did he say my friend to me and say this to these people? And then I never thought of it again. Until that one day I came back from a run and had 47 texts about Manti Te'o and I had no idea what anybody was talking about.
Yeah. It's,
I was on with Linda Cohn that night. That was that was the strangest thing. Yeah. I was like, well, I don't know as much as anybody else does, because I just found out about this myself. Not to throw myself out there for not knowing about this, but it was pretty crazy.
Yeah. And I'm not going to try to give myself too much credit here, but my best friend at the time played for Notre Dame, and he had kind of sent me a text. I was actually, I think I was up in Minnesota, about both different incidents. And I talked to him about both of those. And I was like, I was pretty convinced, at least with the Manti Te'o one, I thought that he was just messing with me.
Yeah.
And then he's like, obviously don't say anything, but this is about to get really, really, really bad. And I was like, no, it's not going to be that bad. And was I very wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a strange period of time for Notre Dame. That was quite an off season. There are a few other things that happened that off season that are less publicized, but we all remember if you start listing things from the 2013 off season, I mean, I guess starting with the day after the game, when you're flying home and going to the pool at your resort and you find out Brian Kelly's landing in Philadelphia. that was a strange way to end the Alabama game.
Yeah. No, you guys had quite a lot to write about there in a short period of time. Just the last thing here, is there anything that, you know, you want to leave the audience here with today, or anything that would, you know, you want the audience to know, about Tim O'Malley?
Yeah, we want to have fun too. And I try to be as respectful as I can. I don't throw random thoughts out there without having a reason to say it. So I very rarely get in fights on Twitter. Don't approach me for a fight on Twitter, 'cause I'm not going to engage. It's one thing. I love hearing from fans. We can have disagree on everything without being disagreeable. That's something that I think we really need to learn. We have learned on message boards. I think that's more of a community for most people. It'd be nice if we could learn it on Twitter. I like to enjoy sports just as much as everybody else, every other woman and man that watches them together. And we can't take them so seriously. It is supposed to be fun.
Awesome. Well, that's a great sentiment to leave it with. And I hope some people heed to that, because, you know, the amount of, you know, potential fights that ND fan 1964321 will probably attack you with, hopefully will decrease because of that.
I disagree with a couple colleagues vehemently on many things, and we are friends. So I think that's one way of looking at it. I think we can, if we don't even know each other, we should all be able to agree on some things, right? Or agree to disagree, more likely.
Awesome. Well, Tim, I just wanted to say thank you again. This has been great. You've been gracious with both your time and your stories. And just to close out here again, where can people find you?
Tim O'Malley, ND on Twitter, and of course, Irish Illustrated on the 24/7 Sports Network. And thanks a lot for having me on. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. Great. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thank you.